Pete Seeger, How Can I Keep From Singing?
I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want's just food for my baby. Give to me my old job back.
That's the voice of Pete Seeger on his first recording, age 21. In time, he would become an American icon, the singer the government couldn't silence. And with the Lomax family and others, the Seegers sparked a folk music revival, a campaign to reintroduce Americans to songs their grandparents sang. Perhaps he was a musical patriot, bound like his New England Puritan ancestors to principle. Called before a congressional committee, he'd bring his banjo and try to sing truth to power. It didn't always work. He ended up perhaps the most blacklisted musician in American history. All this in the next hour of How Can I Keep From Singing, based on the book of the same name. I'm David Dunaway, and this is the second in a three-part series on Pete Seeger and on America's folk music revivals, based on historic recordings.
I once was a tool of oppression, as green as a sucker could be. And monopolies banded together to beat a poor hayseed like me. But now I've roused up a little, their greed and corruption I see. And the ticket we vote next November will be made up of hayseeds like me. Will be made up of hayseeds like me.
The tradition of using songs to reform the world goes back to the Battle of Jericho in the Bible, to Plato's Republic, to the Goliards in the Middle Ages who sang the news of the day. Music has always served as a barometer of society, whether or not those listening reflect on what it tells of their era. America's history of singing out against injustice is as old as the colonies themselves. When people feel mistreated, they sing about it. Abolitionists and farmers in the 18th and 19th centuries, environmentalists, union, and anti-war organizers today. Often, the singers pay a price for their opinions. Pete Seeger.
You've heard me quote the Arab proverb, when a king puts the poet on a payroll, he cuts off the tongue of the poet. Great leaders like Dr. King, he says, without songs, our movement would not have gone as far as it has. You know, Andrew Fletcher in the 17th century says, rather than write a country's laws, I'd rather write a country's songs. Somebody told me Plato wrote, very dangerous for the wrong kind of music to be allowed in the Republic.
If you listen to the older music, politics is shot through it.
Cy Khan.
Not necessarily in the way that I think so many political artists, not just musicians, artists, think of political art today, which is that it has to be explicitly political. If you take the varieties of American music, it is a working class music, it is a poor people's music, not exclusively, but very heavily. And the politics are implicit because it's about work, it's about hard times, it's about struggling to put an existence together, it's about living on the margins of the law.
Pete Seeger, the youngest son of two musicians and professors, learned about folk music from his father, then working in the folklore programs of the New Deal. Through him, Pete had fallen in love with the five-string banjo and marched in May Day parades as a teenager. But times were changing and war was in the air.
Goodbye, goodbye, little darling. I know that it won't be long until I belong to my Uncle Sam. I can feel the draft coming on.
Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain of England announcing the Munich Pact.
I shall not give up the hope of a peaceful solution or abandon my efforts for peace as long as any chance for peace remains.
Seeger's first recording group, the Almanac Singers, had taken folk songs and added anti-war and pro-labor verses in 1941, back when joining a union meant more than keeping your job. The Almanacs weren't the only ones singing peace songs before Pearl Harbor. Here's a topical song by Wingy Minone.
Man, stop that war! Them cats are killing themselves! Put away the guns, put the bombs on the shelf. Stop this war, the cats are killing themselves! Boy, they're shooting them up, and they're shooting them live. They even got wigs and shooting them fire.
Now, here we are in St. Louis, Missouri. Here is Ben E. Ladd, 52 years old, married, father of three grown children, a filling station owner. Mr. Ladd, do you think that you personally would be better off or worse off if we go to war?
Well, I've had a pretty tough time the last couple of years. The way I figure is that a good deal of the mess we've been in for the past 10 years can be blamed on the last war.
The America First Committee has brought you the opinions of
President Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Let no man or woman, thoughtlessly or falsely, talk of America sending its armies to European fields. We seek to keep war from our own firesides by keeping war from coming to the Americas.
And so the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, concludes his address from the White House in Washington, D.C.
The following official communique has been issued from 10 Downing Street.
This country is at war with Germany.
Just to bring you up to date on the news of Europe, if you are just turning on your radios, Great Britain is now at war with Germany. Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain announced this fact in a broadcast.
Franklin D., listen to me, you ain't gonna send me cross the sea, cross the sea, cross the sea, you ain't gonna send me cross the sea.
The Almanac's big break finally came once they stopped singing peace songs after the Soviet Union was invaded.
Only gradually, as the fall came along, 41, our emphasis came more Beat Hitler. And the Beat Hitler songs didn't get written overnight. In other words, we didn't suddenly on October 16th say, okay, folks, we quit singing Union songs, now we're going to sing Beat Hitler songs. But each month as the war news built up and so on, we de-emphasized the Union struggle and emphasized the anti-fascist struggle.
Winston Churchill.
We have differed and quarreled in the past, but now one bond unites us all. To wage war until victory is won, and never to surrender ourselves to servitude and shame.
Lee Hayes.
The nature of the war changed, and the whole Chamberlain policy had to be changed, so we no longer could attack because there was a chance of winning an anti-fascist war.
It was in December of 1941, because we were still on 10th Street at the time of Pearl Harbor. It was Sunday, and Arthur Stern came in. Have you heard the news? The Japs have just bombed Pearl Harbor. I said, what's Pearl Harbor? Said, oh, that's a big Navy base in Hawaii. We're at war.
Mr. President, we haven't always agreed in the past, I know, but that ain't at all important now. What is important is what we got to do. We got to lick Mr. Hitler, and until we do, other things can wait. There's lots of things wrong, but Hitler won't help them.
The Almanac's Beat Hitler songs were immensely popular.
We were absolutely completely unprepared for success of any kind. We just straggled up to the microphone, started to sing, wearing whatever it was we happened to be having on at the moment.
The Almanacs auditioned at one of New York's fanciest nightclubs, the Rainbow Room.
We were in this enormous nightclub, deserted, with the tablecloths on the tables, looking out over this enormous view of Manhattan. I'd never been in any place like that. This was upper crust society. The people in it were sharp businessmen running a big nightclub. They thought of us as an act and treated us like an act, and we didn't know how to respond. And it was so clearly the wrong place. All the people there could think of was that we should wear blue jeans and bandanas.
On February 14, 1942, the Almanacs played for 30 million listeners simultaneously on all four networks.
This is war.
We singing people sing a different kind of tune now. A battle hymn made up of strains of music from a thousand whirring dynamos and working locomotive bells and tractors groaning in low gear. Songs will rise up from our singing people, some well worth the nation's ear. Songs to work to and to fight to and to set our quotas to.
German Army General Staff, yes, they miss connection. They went 100 miles a day, but in the wrong direction.
Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Don't lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more. Hey, round, round, Hitler's grave, round, round we go. Don't lay that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
They had signed a contract with Decca Records, which was very big at that time. They had signed up with William Morris. William Morris laid out the money for their union dues. They had to join 802 to become professionals and was lining them up a nationwide tour. When this Red Baiting article, as I remember, it appeared first in February on the front page, they were told not to come back to the Rainbow Room. Decca said the contracts are canceled. William Morris says, this is the end of it.
We weren't willing to change, and the Rainbow Room wasn't willing to take us on our terms.
Seeger had concerns closer to home. He'd met a girl at a square dance, Toshi Ota. They started dating, and then Pete Seeger received his induction notice.
Early summer of 1944, took a troop ship to Hawaii and then to Saipan, and I guess arrived there in the late summer.
The Almanacs split up. Some moved to Detroit to help out in wartime work. Pete Seeger ended up in the South Pacific. On Saipan, he missed the music he'd made back home with his friends. Singing under the stars as the waves lapped the shore made a pretty fine time, but something was missing, a way to use music to promote social change. Mario Cassetta of People's Songs West.
We said we'll find some way of getting these songs out where they can be used, and that's why we'll publish them in a bulletin or something, any way we can. It was to use songs for political action in a broad sense, whatever that might mean.
So they've given up. Take a bow, G.I.
This is it, kid. This is the day. This is what we've been waiting for.
When Pete came back from the Army, he was a very different man. He had matured physically. He was an infinitely stronger singer. He was vibrant. He'd always been tense, lean, and bony. Those years of intense physical activity had put some weight on him. He was physically hard as nails. He had worked in Army camps all over the place to all kinds of audiences. He came back with the People's Songs idea in his head. And the same burning dedication that he always had had.
Somebody asked me in those days around January of 46, what's your purpose in life? I said, to make a singing labor movement, period. We really hoped that we could go and sing for unions and they get enthusiastic about using music, union choruses, all. I was hoping to find hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of union choruses. Just as every church has a choir, why not every union have a chorus?
Erwin Silber.
There were great expectations of a good relationship with the CIO when People's Songs was started.
Leo Christensen of People's Songs.
I became aware of the fact that the Cold War was on its way right before the war was even over when I was working the shipyards, because I would talk to these guys. They were scared to death, and particularly scared to death of the Russians. And so they would say, boy, we're going to have to take those Russians on, because the war was over.
And another war was beginning, as the Cold War threatened the hopes of Pete Seeger and People's Songs. Anti-communism was spreading across the world like a virus. A character in a Woody Allen movie expressed a popular attitude.
The only good communist is a dead communist.
Unions still liked music at their meetings, but the CIO organizers who'd hired the Almanacs before the war were now being kicked out. And People's Songs was being infiltrated by the FBI, who bugged their telephones and typewriter and rummaged through their trash.
Gee, but I'd like to be a G-man and go bang, 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 bang. I'd be a brave gang-busting he-man and go bang, 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 bang. I'd put on disguises of all different sizes, and would I win prizes for telling who spies is? Gee, but I'd like to be a G-man and go bang, 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 stick 'em up.
Eventually, People's Songs placed their fate on supporting Henry Wallace for president in 1948.
I am committed to peaceful negotiations with the Soviet government.
1948 was the year of the Progressive Party and Henry Wallace. Today, it seems like a footnote to history, but there's no way to describe the excitement that surrounded that movement on the left.
About him, we'll sing about him and preach
well,
it.
Let us
talk about him. Henry Wallace is the man.
Well, Wallace is the man for you and me. He came to set this country free. He traveled east, traveled west, went with Roosevelt, stood the test. He went way down in the southern land, spoken the truth under every man.
Way down in each land.
This is the beginning of the Cold War. Wallace had broken with Truman around the question of the Cold War. Wallace campaign hired us, gave us money. We put out a Henry Wallace songbook. We ran the music at the convention in Philadelphia. We were totally involved in it, and Pete was right in the middle of it. And we knew the price we were paying. We knew, you know, we were losing out with the unions.
In the popular vote, the president has 1.5 million more than the governor. Henry Wallace has 995,000. Governor Thurmond, 823,000.
President Truman and Governor Dewey of New York defeated Henry Wallace. People's Songs went bankrupt, and its president, Pete Seeger, was out of a job. He tried for grants as a folklorist. None turned up. Instead, as a last resort, he and Lee Hayes of the Almanacs got together with Ronnie Gilbert and Fred Hellerman to form a folk song quartet, The Weavers. They were rehearsing to sing in a Greenwich Village nightclub when the police and Ku Klux Klan started America's first anti-communist riot in Peekskill, New York, in 1949.
We had 8 windows broken. A number of them were broken by more than one time. A guy says, I was a teenager, and police came along to us and says, come on, we're going down to Ossining Beach and get stones to throw at the commies. And so they piled a lot of kids in a truck and came back with a whole truck, and they put one pile here and there. Now, don't get them too big. You have to throw these, remember. Don't make them too small. You want to break those windows.
Let me tell you the story of a line that was held, and many men and women whose courage we know well, as they held the line at Peekskill on that long September day. We will hold the line forever till the people have their way.
My name is Howard Fast. I'm here to tell you the story of Peekskill.
It was Labor Day, and we went 25,000 strong. While 4,000 trade unionists, most of them real veterans, formed a protective guard, we held our concert with Paul Robeson and Pete Seeger and Hope Foy, and it was a beautiful day, a fine performance and a victory for all Americans.
We must keep fighting until we're tired and old.
You're listening to Pete Seeger, How Can I Keep From Singing?
When the music was all over, we started to go home. We did not know the trouble and the pain that was to come. We got into our buses and drove out through the gate and saw the gangster police, their faces filled with hate. Then without any warning, the rocks began to come. The cops and troopers laughed to see the damage that was done. They ran us through a gauntlet to their everlasting shame. And the cowards there attacked us, damnation to their name.
That's the sound of fascism. Not in Germany, but here in America. Remember it.
This is Pete Seeger. I was there, too. There were 900 police, deputies, and state troopers at Peekskill. They allowed the mob to form along a four-mile line of road and directed all traffic down this only exit and then stood by watching while the hoodlums threw rocks through the windows of cars and buses. Heads were bashed in, eyes were cut by flying glass. Cars were overturned and the people in them dragged out and beaten. And the police stood by and laughed. Hoodlum gangs went on a night-long reign of terror all through Westchester County, clear down to 210th Street and Broadway. Then the police moved. They moved into the picnic grounds to beat up the trade union guards.
Over 160 wounded were reported at hospitals. One trade unionist, for example, had his nose pulverized, his skull fractured, and lost the sight of one eye permanently. At a great mass meeting to protest Peekskill, Paul Robeson gave our answer.
These Klan-inspired and police-condoned hoodlums cannot stop the song of freedom in America. We are going on singing and presenting our concerts in every corner of America. Let's fight together.
All across the nation we are telling you this tale. You can marvel at the concert and know we have not failed. We shed our blood at Peekskill and suffered many a pain, but we beat back the fascists and we'll beat them back again. Hold the line, hold the line. We will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere.
We thought of it as a terrible attack of fascists upon American civil liberties. I've told you about the signs in Peekskill saying, "Wake up, America," Peekskill did. And they were calling on the rest of America to do the same thing. In other words, whenever you find there's a commie around, you do something about it.
After Peekskill, the Weavers began singing commercially. Alan Lomax brought Carl Sandburg to hear them, who wrote in a column, "When I hear the Weavers, I hear America singing." Here's their first recording in 1949.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning. I'd hammer out love between all of my brothers. A bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, I'd ring out love between all of my brothers. And I got a song.
hammer of justice. It's the bell of freedom. It's the song about love between all of my...
Arlo Guthrie.
I just remember sitting in the seats, you know, with my brother and sister and probably other kids, listening to him sing, and I loved, you know, Lee Hayes' stories. I used to love to hear him talk. And I loved the way they sang. Just straight out, straight ahead. A few embellishments here and there just to make things funny.
I knew a preacher, one of the very few people I ever knew who didn't like music in any form. He claimed that according to his religion it was sinful. I would say, preacher, I just can't understand your point of view, because it defines the indefinable, expresses the inexpressible. And he says, well, I wouldn't care if it unscrewed the inscrutable. It's still wicked, and I don't like it.
Out of nowhere, fame happened again. Decca Records called and asked for a contract, and the Weavers had a new manager, Harold Leventhal. In 1950 alone, they had four records go platinum. Frank Sinatra recorded their song Cena Cena for Comeback. They were singing in Vegas. They were scheduled for their own weekly television show. Don McLean, composer of American Pie.
The Weavers were superstars. That group is one of the most important quartets in the musical history of this country. It's only because of the Blacklist that people aren't told that. Their work is present all the time, everywhere.
The Weavers' folk songs and their TV show would be a breath of fresh air on television, then a young medium dominated by old radio shows. The Weavers were offered a slot opposite the Lone Ranger.
Uh-oh, the cuckoo kids. That means it's time to go.
It's howdy-doody time.
I think that Lee very much enjoyed Vegas and success and stardom, and I think Pete was nauseated by it.
As for myself, I loved the road.
Ronnie Gilbert of the Weavers.
I love the clubs, I love the hotels, I love dressing up. Pete, of course, hated it. Pete couldn't tolerate, number one, the luxurious part of it. And number two, he was bored. He didn't let himself be bored because everywhere we went, he found somebody or something to do. He was traveling with a printing press once to make the Christmas cards for them.